Welcome back. You're on Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Tessa Duda started writing when her children left home. She's hardly stopped since. The paperback of Alex is Penguin New Zealand's best-selling ever work of fiction for adults or children. For adults, she's written short stories, essays, several anthologies, and a biography about Margaret Mahe. In 2003, she was awarded the Mansfield Scholarship in Manton, and it was there that she began her present project, which is 13 short stories about older women. The stories are generous, funny, and surprising, and she is here to talk with us about them. Tessa, welcome. Those are terrific stories.
Thank you.
Did they come to you fairly readily when you arrived in Manton?
Well, yes, I went there in spring of 2003. And found myself there for a month by myself, and it was a very strange environment, and it just seemed to be the right time to try something quite new. So I thought, well, an adult short story, yes, where do I start? And I thought, well, I've got a couple of family stories which possibly I can use as triggers. So I wrote the first two, and then I wrote another one, and then I began to think, well, I've probably got enough for a themed collection here if I just keep on going with some of the... using some of my family stories as triggers, although I hasten to say that none of them are in any way biographical or autobiographical. The fun of writing fiction is to take an idea and then create a whole new scenario around it, or take the idea as far as you can go.
You managed to do that, I suspect, in part so well, in part because what you observe is informed by a lifetime of observation. And I've seen elsewhere you've talked about recommending to young writers that they get themselves experience, that they see the world before they begin writing.
Absolutely. Someone has put it very well, stand up and live before you sit down and write. And that's, I suppose, why I always encourage young writers not to try and bring out a best-selling novel when they're 22. That can equally well happen when they're 32 or even 42 in many cases. Those years that they spend from leaving school through to about their 30s are years of great richness, and they should be absolutely relished.
And do you find that as you begin to write, as you did once your children had left home, that there is a sort of a compression of all of those observations, that they start to come out as sort of somewhat like an accordion expanding
that's
again?
An interesting thought. Yes, I think that's probably true with most writers. I think they share one characteristic. They are very curious people. And I trained as a journalist, and so I was right from the start, from age 17 or so, I was used to being required to be professionally observant and put it down on paper. So even though I never thought to ever write fiction until I was, 38, nevertheless, as a journalist, I'd had some training I once said to an old ex, one of my former editors, that I felt that writing, being a journalist, had been a very good practice for writing fiction, and I didn't think he didn't take it too well, actually. But it's true,
Yes, and in fact, that resembles the trajectory of Annie Proulx's career too, doesn't it?
Yes, she was a journalist, yes,
and magazine articles, and then finally began writing a novel at about 50. I think.
Well, I'm glad I didn't start any younger, but I had no ambition to. It was the most extraordinary thing. I think in my case, a story lay in wait for me. And when I was ready, I was about 38, it suddenly announced one night, I want you to write this story, and that was Night Race to Kawa. And that was nearly 30 years ago now, and I haven't stopped. I've just been hard at it.
There is something, in the book itself, there's something that occurs to me is the observation I've heard elsewhere that women of this certain age, who are typically past 50, become invisible.
That used to be true.
Yes.
I don't think it's true any longer, actually, because I think the baby boomers are making damn sure it isn't. In fact, I'm calling this book taking, first of all, chick lit as a genre which has become recognised, and then somebody told me the other day that there's now hen lit. Well, this is crone lit. And it's, the use of the word crone in an entirely positive way to mean people who've lived. You've had lots of experiences, both sad and funny and joyful, and are actually enjoying their what we used to call their twilight years, but I don't think we do any longer. I think what is going on at the moment is very interesting. I think we're redefining old age.
Well, it is striking that I see biographies of or hear the stories of people of a generation before that, And you see that at the end of their life, they were completely exhausted. They were worn out because they were doing physical, typically doing physical work.
Well, certainly as far as women goes, they were worn out childbearing, of course, in the days when they had 10 children before they stopped. But the physical realities of having to, well, in the pioneer years, having to bake you know, many pounds of bread a week, they did wear themselves out by 50. And, of course, I think we have to remember that the 20th century condition of menopause was hardly known before this, because women just simply didn't live long enough. So it's very interesting to actually be of the certain age at the beginning of the 21st century, because I think in the last 50 years we have slowly redefined what it means to be elderly and to and what it means to be retired. I mean, that's another thing which is changing very much before our eyes. And I think the book, the 13 stories in the book, does reflect that very much.
And a recurring theme in the book of loss.
Yes.
You've said.
Well, the longer you live, the more loss you're going to have to face. Yes, there is a lot of loss in there. The publishers did say to me after I submitted the first 12, and they said these stories add up to a rather dark picture of later age, no matter how much poignancy and in some cases joyfulness there is in it. Could you write one which is just a little bit more upbeat? I said, yes, certainly. There's one I would very much like to write about, a woman who's been a volunteer all her life, in a way that many thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people in this country are. And the story that I already had in my mind was about a woman who's been a very ordinary, as she thinks, volunteer all her life. She gets a letter through the mail one day which offers her a QSM in recognition, and she's thrown into a complete spin because, being a genuinely humble person, she doesn't feel very comfortable about accepting it. So I take her through the thought processes and reach a conclusion which I personally think is the one she would have made.
And that is a recurring theme also, that there is a certain selflessness to a number of these characters, that, or rather they're not quite so... they stand in contrast to some male characters who are somewhat more egocentric. Would that be fair?
Somebody did say to me the other day that I'm rather hard on the males in the book. I don't believe I am. I like to think that I'm totally realistic, because I think what's happened in the last 50 years is that women have come to question the men in their lives in a way that possibly the women of my mother's generation didn't do. The men were the sole breadwinners. They were, in many cases, very authoritarian. And I think as that has broken down and women have got more assertive in the last 50 years, that in fact we're more aware of each other as people with both positives and negatives. So I don't think I've been unduly hard on the men. I think that's just the way they are. And some of the women aren't very likeable either. I mean, Maria, the story, which in fact is a rewrite of Twelfth Night, for anybody who knew Twelfth Night well would immediately recognise the story. But Maria is one of the most ruthless, opportunist women that I can imagine existing. Most unlikable character. So I had a lot of fun with that.
And many of these characters simply come alive to you, and you watch with interest as they take their own track?
Yes, they become very real to me. It's quite scary in a way, and it's quite a mysterious sort of process. I get to know them very well. I spend a lot of time getting to know them before I start writing, or while I'm in the writing process. I think about everything that goes to make up their particular personality, you know, what they like to eat and the clothes they wear and what sort of music they like to listen to, anything really, just to sort of try and get a handle on their character. And then when I feel I know them well enough, then I feel I'll know how they respond under pressure. And that really is what storytelling's all about. It's how people respond under pressure.
They have come fully formed in this book, and you were telling me before we began here that you were a little anxious to see how that might be received. You can go all the way through that process and know them so well, but then lose all confidence in it once other people are
you do
judging,
yeah. And I suppose you have to go through the process of of launching a book and getting the feedback, and the early signs are very encouraging, I have to say. And something of a relief, because my reputation is as a children's writer, although I have done adult non-fiction. But this is really quite a new venture for me. So after 30 years, yes, that was the challenge I wanted to set myself.
But it's well worth the read. It's published by HarperCollins?
Yes, it is.
And available from today? No, from...
It's in the shops already, I gather, but it's being launched by Dame Kath Tizard on the 17th of May.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Time for a break now. When we come back, Paul Deedy finds out what's involved in a truly amazing machine that's being used to unlock the secrets of the universe.